The national broadcast, not the national broadcast, oh, well, they are national broadcast. Channel 9, though, I've taken to putting on the highlights of the 1986-87, I think it is, test up on the screen right around the country. It was a good test, this one, too. And the man who made his debut in that test is on the line now, Peter Taylor. Hi, Pete, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, my pleasure. We've been trying to track you down for a few days. Have you become a bit of a recluse in your sort of later days?
No, not by design. It's just that my life's sort of moved on, and cricket, I've always loved the cricket and still like to be involved, but it's not a priority in my life anymore, except for watching my son play.
I was going to say, your son's a pretty fair cricketer, isn't he? He's a great cricketer in Sydney.
Yes, he's making his way. He's got a lot to learn yet, but he's hopefully going to do well, and so I get a lot of enjoyment out of watching Charles, but I haven't made myself a recluse, but I stay in touch with my mates that I played with, I guess, and I do love the cricket.
Well, thanks to
I keep watching it, yeah.
Thanks to one of those mates, Merv Hughes, we managed to track you down. We're pretty happy about that. Pete, they're showing the 1987 test now. What's your memories of that particular test?
Well, that was just a bit of a dream experience. I remember playing the previous game for New South Wales, and we were playing in Newcastle, and I remember saying to Dirk Wellham, "Dirk, what do you think my chances are of selection in this game, in the next game for New South Wales?" And Dirk said, "Oh, I think you've got a fair chance, you know."
Yeah.
Next thing you know, both Dirk and I were picked in the national team. So it was a bit of a shock. And, of course, the actual game was a real dream for me. I was lucky because the Poms hadn't seen me before, and they were aggressive. They were trying to win the game, which was great. Good for the crowd, good for the game. And we had a fantastic test match, so it was good all around.
The story's often rekindled, around this time every year, I suppose, for you and for the people around cricket at the time, that you were a shock selection into the Australian team. Obviously, if you're talking to Dirk Wellham about making the next New South Wales team, was it a big shock to you?
Well, it was, but looking back, I probably was next in line because I was probably the second best finger spinner in New South Wales, and there wasn't a lot of competition at that time around the country for finger spinners, and we had Peter Sleep, who was the leggy, so looking for another off spinner. I think Greg Matthews was the incumbent, and the side had been going poorly, and they decided to make a few changes, and we'd already lost the series, so it was a good opportunity to pick me. I guess they were thinking, well, if it doesn't work out, it's not the greatest loss, and let's give this guy a go. And obviously, a change sometimes does rekindle things, and we were lucky. We had a good game, and things went our way, so it was good.
There was a lot of talk in the media these days about how they it was said that they picked the wrong Taylor at the time. Everyone thought it was Mark Taylor they meant to pick, but it was you. Were you in that camp?
No, not at all. I mean, Mark was obviously in everyone's mind. The funny thing was that it sort of added up that they'd made a mistake because we couldn't work out. No one could work out who was going to open the bat, and they actually didn't have a second opener, and therefore it would have made sense for it to be Mark. But I haven't actually spoken to the selectors, but I've heard them interviewed, and I've know that other people have spoken to them in hindsight, and there was no mistake. They obviously knew what they were doing and what they wanted to do. So it gets a little bit of a parallel to what's happening in these last few games. You know, a few Smokies coming out of the woodwork and doing well.
Yeah, Hilton Cartwright certainly was a name that was on everyone's lips before the start of this the Test match before this one.
Exactly, and when you look at the success of Hanscom and Renshaw, you know, two fine players. I mean, Hanscom in particular I'm so impressed with, and Renshaw's done really well. Just goes to show that, you know, just because the names aren't uppermost in everyone's minds, it doesn't mean that there's not some really good options out there playing Shield cricket. So, you know, we shouldn't close our minds to alternatives.
Absolutely.
And full credit to the selectors in this case, because I think the changes they've made have been good.
Well, they got it right back in 1987 too, because, I mean, you took 6 for 78 in the first innings. You and Peter Sleep bowled Australia to victory in the second innings with 7 wickets between you, and you scored a 42 in an Australian, I think we only made 250 in that second innings of the test in 87, and you got a 42 in the lower order to give us, which finished up being almost identical to the match-winning margin, which was 55 runs.
And exactly, and you know what we did find at that time, my memory is that the side that, you know, had a bit of a hammering, you know, they'd lost the series and morale wasn't great, but I didn't find that. I thought it was fantastic just to be there, and to me it was all fresh, and it was just a thrill to be there. So I hope that my presence actually sort of added to the side, and maybe it did. Maybe that was, and people were looking at me saying, well, this guy's prepared to hang around in the lower order, so the rest of us have got to do that. And I remember Merv hung around for a bit, and, you know, it was great. It was, and to me, I think the new young faces that have come into this game, they're valuing their position, aren't they? They just love it. They love the fact that they're there. They realise what a thrill it is, and, you know, when you've been there for a while, sometimes you don't see the wood for the trees, and, you know, things all become a bit complicated and a bit hard, and it's easy to get down on yourself. But when you don't have any baggage, it's a bit easier.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Can you remember walking out onto the ground in that first innings to bat?
Yes.
How were the knees and the arms and the tummy at that stage?
Well, I think from memory, it was towards the end of the day, and I was hoping that I wouldn't have to bat, and Tim Zura, I think from memory, the keeper was batting in front of me, and I think Tim got out, and I thought, oh no, I've got to go out. So out I went, and I think I was facing Gladstone Small, but he was nice to me. He was very, mind you, had been bowling all day, so he wouldn't have been exactly fresh. But no, look, I was very nervous, but the crowd was supportive, and it was my home ground, and, you know, fantastic. I mean, looking back, it was just fantastic. I had no regrets whatsoever. You know, I would have liked to do better, course, but we won the game, and Peter Sleep bowled beautifully on the last day under pressure, and I got a bit tired, I have to say. I mean, the experience, the emotional energy was very tiring, you know, I found in that first test match, but it was just a great feeling and a great game.
Well, you know? Having a look at the figures, I mean, you finished up bowling 55 overs in the match. Peter Sleep, you mentioned, bowled us to victory along with yourself in that second innings. He bowled 57 overs for the match. So between the two spinners, are you expecting to see a similar thing happen in the SCG in this test?
Well, the wicket looks pretty benign to me. There's turn there, but it's pretty slow. I remember that wicket in 87 was a fantastic deck. It was turn, and it was, as if you wanted to put in, you got a bit of pace out of the turn as well and a bit of bounce. I just hope this wicket isn't completely benign. It just looks a little bit like that to me. So it's going to be a bit of a slog. I think the spinners will have a big part to play. And, you know, it's good that we've got one going each way. So, yeah, and I think O'Keefe bowled well yesterday. I think he'll bowl a bit today. And I think Lyons on the improve again. I think he's been through a bit of a tough time, but I think he's bowling a little bit better now and getting his lines right. So, yeah, if they can settle in and bowl together, even that will work too. Put a lot of pressure on.
I wanted to ask you about the bowling in tandem, and I also wanted to ask you about that SCG pitch, because you mentioned it's benign now, but back in 87, as you said, it took a bit of spin. It's changed over the years. Is that something that you're sad to see happen to the Sydney wicket?
Well, I don't know if it has changed. I mean, it's just when you're watching it on television, it's hard to say, but I think we've got an issue with all the pitches. I mean, we've got these drop-in pitches that are so flat.
Yep.
And, you know, we really do have to be careful about what we do. I'm not critical at all of the one thing about the Sydney wicket. It's a proper cricket wicket. It's not a drop-in. And that's just the way it's been made. And this particular deck, I mean, it's a good deck. There's nothing wrong with it. You can't criticise it. It's just it'd be nice to see a bit more variability in the wickets, you know, and a bit of natural degradation. I think the wickets now are so good that they're not degrading.
Yeah.
And we need that, you know, to keep, you know, we need a bit of pace and bounce and movement early, and then we need the turn to increase as the game gets on, and a bit of scuffing up, and all that is part of the picture of a test match, isn't it? You know, and if it's just a slog and just batting versus batting, it's very hard yards.
The difference between an SCG pitch day one in 1987 and day five, and to bring that to today, there's hardly any difference when you look at the wicket over the 5-day period now.
I know, and the decks are so well made that you know, the footmarks aren't really affecting the pitch. You know, the pitch in Melbourne, it just was so good, wasn't it? It was just so brilliant,
yeah.
And it just hardly changed. It was. I don't know whether we can instruct the curators to actually change the decks and actually make them reflect the way Test cricket should be, which is a sort of a natural degradation over the 5 days.
Those big fast bowlers like Merv Hughes wouldn't have run on the wicket to give you a little bit of a spot to hit, would they, Pete? That wouldn't have happened, surely.
But I tell you what, when they did, at least they made a change. At least they actually did affect the wicket. But nowadays, that doesn't work. But it certainly does overseas, doesn't it? They do that, and
yep.
You know, the spinners come into their own in those conditions, which is kind of good. You know, it's another skill that the batsmen have to learn, how to play against the turning ball and the variable bounce and what have you.
What about bowling in tandem? And we're going to see, we see it so rarely these days that we see two spinners in the side at any time. Bowling in tandem, was that a good thing for you, or do you think it does or doesn't work?
Oh, look, I think it's part of it. I think, you know, if both bowlers are bowling well, there's a lot that can be said for it. I mean, it puts the batters under pressure. You can actually attack with spin bowlers, one going one way, one going the other. Obviously, you know, it gives the fast bowlers a break, then they can come in for short, sharp spells. It works, provided both blokes are bowling well and you know, they're not leaking runs. And you can apply pressure that way. I think it's a great thing to have up your sleeve, to have two spinners in the side. And yes, but they don't have to bowl in tandem, but they can.
Yep.
You know, they don't have to bowl the quicks from one end and the spinners from the other either. I mean, you can do anything you want, and you've got more options, haven't you?
Yep.
I mean, at the moment he's got a batting all rounder who can bowl. Two quicks and two spinners, which is pretty good to have up your sleeve.
Yeah.
He's even got, you know, the captain can bowl leggies as well.
Yep.
You know?
The actual craft of spin bowling, Pete, is that a dying art, or do you think we're keeping it alive?
Well, I hope we are. I mean, it really revolves around the future of first class and Test cricket. I mean, you know, we've got a challenge to keep people interested in the longer form of the game, and you know, that means you need a contest. So I come back to my idea about, you know, yes, spin bowling is a craft that we don't want to lose. When you watch the Big Bash and so on, it's really not spin bowling. It's just defensive. How do I bowl something that's not going to get hit over the fence?
Yeah.
It's really not spin bowling as I know it. But that's valid. But I'd like to see the long form of the game remain a contest. What we don't want to do is make it just a batting contest, you know. Yeah.
But
and
we almost—that
will help with the spinners if we do that.
We almost high five each other and, you know, do handstands when someone actually turns the ball these days.
Yeah, and again, wicket's so good.
Yeah,
and you know, it's just—I don't know. I don't know how we approach it. We need to watch that. I don't know. I'm not at that level in the game that I have any influence on that. But certainly, it does help. And the same thing with fast bowling. I mean, I feel sorry for the fast bowlers. They've just got such a slog, you know. And if you're not over above 140, you know, you've got to be swinging it left and right and doing all the other things if you're going to be competitive. I mean, I feel for the bowlers under these conditions when the decks are so good.
Yeah, it's very much a batsman's game these days, and we won't even start on the size of the bats.
Well, I think they've already addressed that a little bit, haven't they? I think they've brought out a bit of a standard that they're going to try and stick to. Yeah, no, look, I understand that, you know, the bats are fantastic and good luck to them. But then in addition to that, they're making the ground smaller.
Yes.
And the wickets are better. And the balls have got flatter seams. I mean, it just goes on and on, you know. We've really got some issues that we need to address to keep the game competitive between bat and ball.
Absolutely. Pete, apart from watching your son, do you have any involvement in cricket these days?
No, not official. I ring up my friends. Merv's one of them, and, you know, we've remained in contact. Incidentally, he tells me you're not a bad bloke, and he advised me I had to give you a hard time. You didn't give me a chance. But I do stay in touch with the guys I played with, and you know, I occasionally get invited down, and we've got a few functions and things which enables me to catch up with all the other blokes that are currently in cricket and everything. So that's always good. I do love it. And I love the club cricket too. in Sydney when the sun's playing. I can think of nothing better than going and sitting under a tree and watching a day's great cricket. It's great.
Yeah, no, it is fantastic. Good on you, Peter. Appreciate your time. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you, mate.
Peter Taylor there, of course, the man who came, well, not from the clouds, but came out of Shield cricket and made his debut back in 1987 at the SCG in the test against the Poms when we won by 55 runs. We lost the series 2-1, but we won that last test by 55 runs. He took 8 wickets and scored a 40 on debut. Pretty good debut and good catch-up with him there.